Jersey Guy Sports, your sports talk home for the Yanks, Giants, Rangers, and the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. I'm your host, Don, and thanks for tuning in. Today I'll be discussing the Rangers beating the Hurricanes 3-1 on Sunday at MSG to move to within 2-1 in the series. And the Yankees, we'll talk about some odds and ends. So let's go ahead and get started. The New York Rangers, and Igor Shesterkin actually, beat the Carolina Hurricanes Sunday 3-1 at Madison Square Garden. This was Game 3 of the second round of the NHL playoffs. With the win, the Rangers now trail the series 2-1, with Game 4 slated for Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden. It was a game in which the Rangers, again, were outshot by a wide margin, and a game where Igor played very well, and he made 43 saves. He let in just the one goal. It was a bad one, but he stopped a bunch of very, very tough shots and really stood on his head for a lot of the game. Gallant in this game broke up the kid line of Alexi Lafreniere, Filippito, and Kaapo Kakko, which had been the Rangers' most consistent unit, really, all postseason. He put Hedl up on the top wing, you know, on the top line at wing with Kreider and Zibanejad. Vetrano moved down to the third unit along with Kaapo Kakko, and Kopp was centering, and Lafreniere moved up to the right wing of the second unit with Panarin and Strom. And it worked well. And Hedl in particular looked energizing. He was very effective all night on that top line. The Rangers had a strong start to the game, a few early chances, and then took a penalty immediately 1 minute into the game. So that was not good, but they killed it off, and they've been doing pretty well against the Carolina power play all series long so far. Carolina, but, you know, continue to pepper the Rangers and Igor with shots early on. As a matter of fact, they took a 13-2 advantage in shots on goal just 9 minutes into the first period. The Rangers did, however, draw a power play just after that, about 10 minutes in, about halfway into the first period, and Mika converted. He wristed a laser inside the post and put the Rangers up 1-0. And that was huge and important for the Rangers. Most of the next 5 minutes, though, still saw the ice tilted toward the Rangers' goal. The Rangers continued to lose faceoffs. Of course they did. Actually losing 10 consecutive faceoffs at one point. 10 consecutive faceoffs. I have no more words anymore about the Rangers and faceoffs. There's nothing else I can say that I haven't said before other than it's just killing them. Just killing them. The first period ended up 1-0 Rangers, and the Rangers had given up 18 shots on goal in the first period. 18 shots on goal in the first period. That matches the total shots the Rangers had on goal the entire game against Carolina last game until about, I don't know, 3 minutes left in the game. 18 shots in the first period. Early in the second, Kreider wristed a shot in the corner and made it 2-0 Rangers. It was good to see Kreider and Mika contributing again. They're really critical to the Rangers' success, and we need both of them to do really well going forward if there's any chance of squeaking out a miracle upset against Carolina this series. The good feeling zone with the Rangers up 2-0 didn't last very long as Carolina scored on a 2-on-1 on what was a bad goal that was given up by Igor. It was a rare bad goal, and it made the score 2-1 Rangers at that point. I forget the guy's name, came down on the right wing. He was a lefty, and he backhanded it, and it somehow got underneath Igor's arm, bounced and squeaked through and rolled in the goal. It was a rare bad goal. Igor had been playing spectacularly before that, save after save, really doing well. The Rangers, though, continued to get outshot as the second period closed, with the Rangers up 2-1 at the close of the second period. At that point, the Rangers had given up 35 shots on goal through two periods. 35 shots. Way too much. 35 shots, two periods, at home. Oy vey. Igor was strong again, though, in the third period, and the Rangers held off a push, I guess, from Carolina, and they added an empty net goal at the end by Tyler Mott to win it 3-1. Tyler Mott, again, by the way, continued to play really well and has been a, you know, bright spot for the Rangers, and it really has contributed since he came back late in the Pittsburgh series and has helped each and every game he's been in since. Now, at the very end of the game, as time expired, Domi from Carolina whacked Lindgren, who went right back at him, and a small brawl ensued. I don't understand it on Domi's part or on Carolina's part. They are the better team. It was dumb. It was unnecessary. And it caught the attention of the entire Rangers team. I mean, I don't know. It's like Carolina's trying to poke the bear or the Rangers for no reason. Carolina, for the most part, is dominating the series. It's only 2-1 in games, but they are the better team each and every game here. What you don't want to do is give a team that is probably inferior, the Rangers, a reason to play with extra inspiration, which they seem to have done here. We'll see if that extracurricular activity at the end of the game actually inspires the Rangers on Tuesday night. But in any case, it was just stupid. It's something they didn't have to do. And now the Rangers might be fired up on Tuesday night. And we'll have to say it didn't seem to me to make any sense at all. It was a chippier game. Yeah, there was more penalties and a little more rough stuff, but it wasn't as if, you know, this was brewing all night and, you know, something was going to come. It just seemed sort of out of nowhere because the last sort of 30 seconds to a minute before then, the Rangers were already up 3-1 and, you know, they were just killing off the clock. No one was even trying at that point. You know how it is at the end of the game when the game's over. People are barely skating, and that's how it was. And so nothing was happening, and he just skated up and gave him a whack and a cross-check, and I just don't understand it. And you know what? Great, because now probably the Rangers are fired up. They're going to carry that emotion over to game four, and, you know, we'll see. Maybe they can make it a real series now. This win, in any case, it was a win that breathed some life into this team, at least a little life. It made the series more interesting, and it definitely made Tuesday night's game at the Garden one that it will now be very interested in. That would not have been the case had the Rangers lost this game. It would not have been a game to be interested in had the Rangers been down 3-0. But alas, it's not. It's 2-1, and now if they can win Tuesday night, they can tie up the series, so that would be something. As it stands, you know, I still don't think the Rangers have a very good chance at all to win this series. I do think they have a chance to win on Tuesday night, which would make the series a whole lot more interesting. But, you know, Carolina has outplayed the Rangers now 3 games in a row, and we still have not seen Carolina's best game. I mean, they're not even playing that well, and they're still really having a somewhat easy time against us. We're having all kinds of trouble scoring goals and finding any kind of open ice. As far as the positives for the Rangers, Mika and Kreider had very good games and seemed involved and inspired again, and that is critical for the Rangers. We really need them to step up. Also, Igor Shesterkin had an outstanding game in goal and was the number one star, making 43 saves. As for the negatives, Artemi Panarin, again, I just like the faceoffs. I don't know how many times I can say the same thing. He's just having all kinds of problems. Again, he didn't do much of anything. Nothing. He's again not reading the time and space properly of the playoffs. I think he's got to adjust his game and be quicker deciding and quicker with everything. Ryan Strome, another negative. Again, completely ineffective. You know, the king of missing open nets, again, didn't score a goal and, you know, has been mostly ineffective this entire playoffs. And the only other negative, the Rangers gave up, again, way too many shots on goal and way too many good scoring chances. They have to tighten that up. They have to. Still, the Rangers have some confidence now. And Carolina, by the way, has not won a single road game in these 2022 playoffs. So Carolina is undefeated at home, but winless on the road. So that bodes well for Tuesday night's game at the Garden. If the Rangers do manage to win game four at MSG, the fans might have some hope going forward. And that would be, you know, to make an incredible upset. Again, I don't see the series going the Rangers' way at all. But stranger things have happened when you have an outstanding goaltender. So let's go Rangers. So I'm going to move on and talk about the Yanks now. Excuse me, a few odds and ends on the Yankees. So let's see. The Yankees relief corps seems to be deteriorating a bit. And it's the same three folks that we've mentioned previously, right? Chapman lost yet another game on Sunday. He came in a tie game, gave up a homer. Yankees lost. Chad Green is utterly and completely unreliable and has been all year. And now on top of it, he's hurt. And I keep reading these articles in the paper like, oh, how are the Yankees going to get by without Green? And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, probably better, because this is addition by subtraction. He has been just a walking disaster since the middle of last year, and right through the end of last year and this whole year. It's just utterly unreliable. You don't have any idea what you're getting from Chad Green. So this doesn't bother me at all. As a matter of fact, I really don't want Green on the team anymore, if I'm being honest. And the third cog here is Loizaga in the pen. He had another bad outing as well on Sunday. And time will tell. We're having a tough time in the pen, the Yankees. There's certainly some positives, right? Yeah, obviously, Michael King is spectacular, and Holmes has been just tremendous. And we have a few other guys doing okay. But, you know, as far as Chapman and Loizaga and Green, that is a tough three to not be doing well. So we'll see how that goes. The starting pitching, on the other hand, for the Yankees continues to excel. I mean, all of them, just 1 through 5, great stuff. It's amazing to have a year like this. Cole has been great lately. Seve, very good. Montgomery continues to be good, but obviously the Yankees just, I don't know, have a pathological need to not score any runs every time Monty, you know, pitches, but Montgomery's pitching well. Taillon continues to pitch very well. And what are you going to say? Nestor Cortez continues to be outstanding. Just, you know, he may be an all-star this year. That's how good he is. So, you know, 1 through 5, the pitching is just the starting pitching is outstanding. So we might have some relief woes, but our starting pitching is just money. And I got to say, it's very comforting as a Yankee fan to not have to worry about, hey, who's pitching tomorrow, you know, or the next game, because no matter who they throw out there, they've all been, you know, doing really, really well. So it's quite a comforting feeling as a fan to know, you know, you're probably going to get a good start from your starter. And I don't remember the last time as a Yankee fan I actually felt that way. Aaron Hicks continues to do worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I am quite the broken record here on this podcast about Aaron Hicks, but I think all of my complaining finally has resonated with the fans, because it seems like they regularly boo Hicks now, which I love to see, because it's like they finally woke up and, hey, you know, he really isn't that good here. I don't know. And I don't know what took them so long, but Hicks is not good and has not been playing good in the field or at the plate. He has gone over the last, say, year and a half to 2 years from a very good outfielder to an average outfielder to a below average fielder in short order. I mean, he doesn't hustle on balls that are hit near him on the outfield. He seems lost. He can't gauge where the ball is. He takes circular routes. He misplays balls out there. It's really bad. He is not a good outfielder anymore. I'm sorry. He's hitting .212 now, and this is after getting a few hits this weekend, right? He was just at, I was noticing the other day, .190. Barely better than my good friend Joey Gallo, who's hitting .176. So, you know, to recap, you know, until this weekend, we had two starting outfielders who were batting .176 and .190. That's a great job, Cashman. Gallo and Hicks, just who we want in our starting outfielders. .176 and .190. Oy vey. Anyway, Judge and Stanton continue to rake, and they've been carrying the Yanks. They've just been dominating. Unbelievable years so far from Judge and from Stan. It's great to see, and it's got to give the opponents a little fright. Boone, though, continues to not put them back-to-back, because that would be, I guess, too imposing for, you know, the opposition. Boone wants to make it a little easier on them, apparently, so he's got to put either Hicks between them or, you know, Rizzo, some lefty, because in Boone's mind, lefty-righty horseshit still matters. It doesn't matter if you're burning up the planet like Judges and like Stanton are. We must put a lefty in between them for no friggin' reason whatsoever. Anyway, it is what it is. So, let's see. Torres continues to hit a little better, and he continues to field horribly. Gleyber Torres just is not a good defensive fielder. He throws wild all the time. He makes lazy plays, and you never know with him, you know, how it's going to go in the field. Rizzo continues to play outstanding defense, on the other hand, but he needs to start hitting a little better than he has. He's had a couple big hits, but, you know, his hitting has gone way down recently. We also need much better production from our catchers at the plate. Boy, there is not a lot of offense there at all. Believe me, I'm not missing Gary Sanchez or anything, but, you know, we continue to not have catchers who can hit. And this goes all the way back to Sanchez and before. So it's been a long time since we had a catcher who could just, you know, hit .250 or something. And the Yanks are still, you know, moving forward. Although they dropped a doubleheader on Sunday to the White Sox, the Yankees are still 29-12. This is after losing two games. They're 29-12. And they still have the best record in baseball. On to Baltimore on Monday night. And thank you for listening to Jersey Guy Sports. I want you to please subscribe to the podcast if you can and tell your friends all about it. And I will be back soon with some more sports talk. Thanks and have a good day.